it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, it's time for Dr. Bill. That's me, the computer curmudgeon. I know you've been looking forward to this podcast with bated breath all week long. What is bated breath? Is that when you eat too many of those little fish that they put in? Never mind. Anyway, hi there. I'm glad you could join us today on our podcast, where today we're going to have a very special, special program toward the end of the podcast. We're going to be talking about the doctor's prescription to speed up Windows XP. Ta-da! Oh, man, I know you've just been, you're just so excited. I can feel the intensity of the audience out there waiting. I've got to get XP optimized. Okay, great. Hang in there. It's coming. All right, let's look at what's been happening in the blog. You know, there's Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, the podcast, and then there's Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, the blog. And so we'll find out what's happening in the blog. Oh, yeah, but you know, before I do that, I must tell you, as you know, that this is Dr. Bill, the Computer Curmudgeon Podcast, number 24 for February 25th, 2006. Now you say, why do you always do that? Well, first of all, you're supposed to. You know, when you're supposed to do something, you're just supposed to do something, and that's why we do it, is because we're supposed to, right? Right, yeah. Well, it's just considered one of those common courtesy things to introduce the podcast and put the date and all of that information right up front so that you'll know if you just kind of randomly downloaded some file off the internet, which, of course, you really shouldn't do. You should know what you're downloading. But if you did, you'd then listen and go, oh, okay, I know what this is now. And, of course, Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network.
This show is a proud member of the TechPodcast.com network. Find out more about this show and others at www.techpodcast.com. Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here.
If it's tech, it's here. That's right. You should know that by now. The Tech Podcast Network, I tell you, there's some exciting things happening with the Tech Podcast Network. I can't even go into all of what's going on, but if you stay tuned, you will be amazed at all the good things that are going to be coming down the pike because of what's happening at the Tech Podcast Network. And, of course, because we are a part of the Tech Podcast Network, we want to encourage you to listen to other shows that are part of the network. And so we try to play a little promo each week of a different TechPodcast.com network show. And this week we want to talk about In the Trenches with Kevin Devon.
Hi, this is Kevin Devon, host and producer of the In the Trenches podcast. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite sysadmins everywhere to stop by and join in the fun. Each week I go over some of the issues facing IT professionals and try to provide a little perspective on what it's like in the trenches. I usually wrap up the week with a scheduled tech chat, a roundtable-like discussion where three or four sysadmins discuss current events or a specifically scheduled topic. So what are you waiting for? Stop by and check it out today at kevindevon.com.
That's right. In the trenches, you need to try them out. You know, being a sysadmin, it would be good to hear what other sysadmins are having to put up with, and I do mean put up with, in their day-to-day pursuit of excellence in computing. And speaking of excellence in computing, let's get back to where we were headed originally, which is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, the blog. We're going to go back to a post right after the last podcast on February 20th, and it's one that is about time. The title is, The Truth Comes Out, Linux is Cheaper in the Real World. You know, Microsoft has been spreading fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which, of course, in the computer world we call FUD. Fear, uncertainty, doubt, F-U-D. Yeah, you got it. Okay. FUD, you know, they've been spreading FUD all over the place. It sounds nasty, doesn't it? Spreading FUD. Ugh. Anyway, they've been talking about Windows being cheaper to use than Linux. Now, here's the thing. Windows costs a lot of money. Okay? Linux, you can download off the internet for free. So right off the bat, they've got a little bit of a hard row to hoe, okay? But what they're saying is, I'm trying to get serious now, I'm trying to pull back and try to, you know, present Microsoft's viewpoint fairly. Right. Okay, compose myself. What Microsoft is trying to say is, yes, you may spend a lot of money up front for our product, but it's easier to administrate, and it is more stable, and it allows you to run applications that you are more used to using and can get right off the shelf. Yes. Well, here's the thing about that, you see. Windows is not more stable than Linux. Duh. I mean, that just goes without saying. I'm sorry, but if you put a Linux box up and set it to running, and you put a Windows box up and set it to running, and then you figure out by timing it which one is going to crash and blue screen first, it's going to be Windows. I'm sorry. That's just, it's just reality, folks. It's just the way it is. Microsoft Windows has an issue over time that I, as a sysadministrator, like to call software rot. Even if you have a well-tuned Microsoft Windows system, it will run and run and run, and over time, it will develop software rot. It will just begin to slowly crumble and fall apart internally. That's just Windows. It's just the way it is. Linux, though, will run and run and run and run. I know people that have Linux boxes that they put up years ago, and they've never rebooted. We're talking years and years and years, and they just keep running and running and running. You know, it's kind of like when Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. He invented that first light bulb. Do you know that first light bulb burned for years and 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 years? And it just never burned out. But lo and behold, many years later, through the advancements of modern science, you can now go buy a light bulb and it will last you 6 to 8 months. And then it will burn out. Now, why is that? Well, there's a term called planned obsolescence. If the people that make light bulbs made light bulbs that never burned out, you'd never buy another light bulb. Duh! So you need to have a light bulb that will burn out eventually. But if it burned out, oh, let's say a week after you screwed it into the socket, showing my age there, I guess. But let's say you installed said light bulb in whatever manner you install it, and then it just burned out a week later. Well, you'd go, ah, sorry, light bulb, I'm going to buy a better one. So they have to figure out the optimal amount of time for the light bulb to burn out and you not notice that it really burned out too soon. Now, we know that a light bulb can be engineered to last for years and years and years and years and years. And have you ever noticed that the bulbs that they put up in those really, really high lights don't seem to burn out as often? They engineer those to last a little longer than the ones that you put in your lamp. Wink, wink. So, you see, I'm not saying that Microsoft designed Windows to crash more often than not, because in a way that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, but then again, they're just sorry. So, there you go. At any rate, I digress. The truth comes out, Linux is cheaper in the real world. And what happened is that after Microsoft's Fear, Uncertain, and Doubt campaign, the ODSL came up with an actual study of real people in the real world. And it says the results contradict some Microsoft claims that Linux total cost of ownership is higher than Windows. The report was sponsored by the Open Source Development Lab, the ODSL, and member company Levanta, and undertaken by Enterprise Management Associates. In the survey, the majority of respondents noted that they spent less effort in managing and supporting Linux than they spent on Windows. Well, yeah. If you ask real-world people a real-world question, you'll get a real-world answer, not Microsoft propaganda. Over half said that they could diagnose and repair problems in Linux environments in less time than 30 minutes. Now, if you're a Windows administrator and you have a problem with Windows and you have a blue screen of death, how often can you fix that in less than 30 minutes? There's much research involved. There's knowledge base and TechNet articles to read. There's scratching of the head. There's yelling and screaming and stomping. You have to pull out your chicken and wave it in the air and spread chicken entrails around. And there's many, ceremonial things that you have to do to get a Windows system running. And there's not any of that with Linux. So there you go. Now you know the truth is out. Yeah. Okay. We'll skip over the one. You can read it about the advertisers being too smart for their own good. I might as well go into it a little bit. Next article here is this previous blog entry about Linux being cheaper in the real world. I noticed on that page they had these little automatic ads, that come up at the bottom of the page. And what those ads do, I don't know if you're aware of this, probably are, that they take the verbiage from the page that you're reading and they try to construct an ad that pertains to whatever it is you're reading about. Because they assume if you're reading about it, you must really be interested, and so they're going to attract you to their site based on that interest. Sometimes that backfires. The ads that came up when I read this article about Linux is cheaper in the real world, here's what it advertised. Windows Linux. Great deals on Windows Linux and millions of other products. Windows Linux. Now, I just don't think Microsoft has produced a Linux for Windows yet. It's just me, but I don't think they have. However, this particular site thinks that you can go there and buy Windows Linux. Now, I had Adam Winter, our favorite, Charlotte college student, put a comment on this particular blog entry. And Adam says, well, actually, with Win4Lin, you can have Windows with Linux. Come on, Adam. You know that's not what I was talking about. I've already kind of razzed him and given him a hard time about his post. But I do appreciate you reading, and I do appreciate you commenting, so you just keep those comments coming. But you know that's not what I was talking about. Okay. The next little ad here that automatically generated is Linux for Windows. You're going to have it both ways. You're going to have Windows Linux and Linux for Windows. Find deals on Linux for Windows and other computer software products at this particular site that I'm not going to give them a free ad for because they're using silly advertisements that just don't make a lot of sense. Oh, well. What can you say? Anyway, I just thought that was interesting and kind of a little funny jab there, that they're a little too smart for their own good to have these advertisements that automatically generate the content, because sometimes it can backfire on you. Yeah. Okay, the Geek Software of the Week for this week is a program recommended by a listener to the podcast. Yay! That's something I want more and more people to do. Yeah, hear me? If you got some great software utility, freeware, particularly utility that you are just so excited about, you can't stand yourself, you're just vibrating with excitement, I need to know about it. If it's something I've already heard about, I'll send you a message back that goes, dude, I've already heard about that, all right? But if it's something I haven't heard about, it will show up as a Geek Software of the Week. And you know what an honor that is. Yes, indeed. Well, this particular individual, Sam, one of our faithful podcast listeners from Germany, salute those folks in Germany, is a very cool little program. It is freeware. I've got a link on the site from a company called Nirsoft, Nirsoft, I guess is how you pronounce that. And the program is called Kerr Process. Now, what it does, it gives you information similar to what Task Manager does. You click Control-Alt-Delete, bring up the little Task Manager window, and you look at processes, and it'll show you what processes are running and how much CPU time and so forth and so on, all kinds of information. Kerr Process gives you that same information, but in a much more detailed way, and it will actually show you not only the process, but what company wrote that particular module, or DLL, or whatever it may be, and what program is running and description of it, lots of information, the version of it. It will also show you typically, you know, just like Task Manager, the CPU time and things of that nature. And if it seems to be suspicious, it will actually flag it in red and show you, whoa, dude, you may want to look at this. So it's a really handy little utility. So Cur Process, that's a great, great suggestion, Sam. I'm glad you sent it in. I want you, others of you out there, to send in suggestions for Geek Software of the Week. I've got some really good ones coming in the next few weeks. Some of the research I've done for Speeding Up XP has given us some tremendous software to be Geek Software of the Week. But I want you to send in your suggestions. Now, you can send them to Dr. Bill, that's me, D-R-B-I-L-L, at thecomputercurmudgeon.com. And as you know, that's T-H-E-C-O-M-P-U-T-E-R-C-U-R-M-U-D-G-E-O-N, thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Send that to me, and I tell you what, it might just become a Geek Software of the Week. There you go. All right, next item, fixing Linux with Nopix. Now, you might say, but Dr. Bill, I thought you just said you don't ever have to fix Linux. No, I didn't say that. I mean, anything designed by man will occasionally have a problem. That's just the way it is, okay? But there are cool tools you can use to work with Linux. And actually, Nopix can be used to work with Windows as well. And I'll tell you about that here in just a minute. But this article that I linked to from this this blog entry is specifically about fixing Linux with Nopix. Things you can do if your Linux box does ever happen to die, you can boot off of Nopix. And to give you a little background, Nopix is a Linux distribution that has been specifically written to allow you to boot off of a CD and it not essentially touch your hard disk or your installation at all, but it allows you to boot into an environment that you can then get into that hard disk and do repairs and edit files and things of that nature. So it's an excellent, excellent tool for doing, you might say, computer forensics, trying to bring that computer back from the dead, so to speak. And for Windows, I mentioned you can use it with Windows. The cool thing about Windows is you with Nopix is you can boot off of Nopix, and then you can attach the hard drive that may be, like, totally dead. It won't even boot anymore. But you can attach it to Nopix by mounting it, and it's got a real simple little kind of icon-driven method for doing that. You mount it, and then you can stick a USB thumb drive in the machine and mount that under Nopix, and then you can just drag and drop your data from the dead Windows machine over to your thumb drive and save your data off that way. I've done that many, many times with customers' machines, and it's really handy to do. And you can, you know, you end up being the hero because here, far from their perspective, they've got a machine that won't boot. It's dead. They just can't do anything with it. They're going, I've got to have my data. Please, Dr. Bill, help me. And I go, no problem. Got it under control, and they look at you with this look like, wow, you just are so smart. No, I just know about Nopix and know how to use it. Yes, I have Nopix, and I'm not afraid to use it. So there you go. Nopix is really, really cool. Got a link there. Also have a link to Nopix Linux there in the blog so that you can download it, burn it to a CD, and enjoy. Plus, it'll give you a chance to look at what Linux is like as an operating system if you've never done that. And you really should do that. There you go. All right, next item. MacTel Linux is up and running. Now, we knew this had to happen ever since the Mac announced that they were going, the Mac, Apple announced, Apple announced that they were going to have a Mac that ran on Intel. Somebody, somewhere, was going to install Linux on one of the new Intel-based Macs. Well, somebody finally did it. They beat everybody else to the punch. And ta-da! They have Linux running on a Mac. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure why that's such an exciting thing. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I've said this before. I'm a huge Linux fan. Maybe one of the biggest Linux fans of all time. However, the Mac operating system, OS X, is based on OpenBSD, and BSD is a Unix, and Linux is a Unix-like operating system. So it's already running an operating system that is very much like Linux. So why would you want to run Linux on a Mac? I guess just bragging rights. I mean, you know, just because you can. You know, same reason people climb Mount Everest, I guess. You know, it's there. So they've got to do it. So they did. There you go. All right. Next item, more security issues for the Mac. You know, the Mac has been having some problems lately. And it's, you can't blame it on the fact that they're running on Intel now. This security issue is for any OS X computer, no matter what platform it's running on. But the thing is, these are more evidence that as the Mac continues to gain a little market share, that more and more virus writers and security people are going to turn their attention to it and try to hack it. And it is harder because, as I said, the Mac operating system is based on OpenBSD, and actually OpenBSD is an incredibly secure operating system, so it's very, very hard to come up with security issues in this particular environment. But people can do it, and they're probably going to do it more and more because as more of these articles you know, with security problems for the Mac come out, and the more Apple kind of hems and haws and goes, we're okay, you know. And there's more and more Mac people. I mean, I saw one guy who went into this big deal about the Mac. I'm never going to install an antivirus program on my Mac because it's more secure than Windows. You're living in a dream world, pal. I mean, if the Mac becomes as popular as you as a Mac enthusiast want it to become, there are people going to be writing viruses for it. And there's no shame in running an antivirus. Come on. But as long as Mac users are arrogant enough to make those kinds of statements, you're going to have people that are bound and determined to get in there and destroy that Mac in one way or another. Now, these security issues that they had that were in the news are not at all destructive, okay? They're more annoyances than anything else. And the users involved have to do, you know, all kinds of crazy, stupid things for them to be a problem. So, no, it's not as bad as Windows at all. But at the same time, get real, Mac users. I'm sorry. You're going to have to start applying some security tools to your operating system because people are just going to target it. And the more you yell and scream and holler about how the Mac is so secure it doesn't need an antivirus, it's just going to be fuel to the fire. There are more and more people are going to try to break into it, so there you go. All right. Next item, Windows. Oh, this one pains me. It pains me to talk about it, but I have to. The doctor has to be fair to all, and yes, indeed. Windows is the top server operating system of 2005. Oh. Now, I'm convinced that the reason for this is Microsoft's Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt campaign. As much as we denigrate it, as much as we laugh at it, is having an effect with upper management of the corporate computing world. Since I work in the corporate computing world, I'm not going to say anything about the intelligence of upper management. That would not be wise. Okay. However, suffice it to say that if Microsoft releases some big study that says we're cheaper than Linux, we're more secure than Linux, and an upper management type reads that and goes, wow, I didn't know that. I thought Linux was cheaper. And I thought Linux was more secure. I'd better tell the guys to only buy Windows. Okie dokie. I think that's kind of what's happening here. And that's a shame. Now, Windows has taken the lead by only the tiniest of margins. And Linux is gaining ground. See, it lost the server wars, if you will. The main ground that was lost is actual pure Unix operating systems are giving ground to Windows and to Linux. And Linux is coming up from behind and taking over those servers. So, Windows, enjoy it while you can. Dude, you're going down. All right, next item. Have you ever wanted to play with VMware? You say, I don't know, what's VMware? Okay, VMware is a product that allows you to run in virtual machines other operating systems. So let's say, for instance, you had a Linux box. You build that Linux box, you install VMware, and then within that Linux box, you could set aside a part of your hard drive and install Windows in a virtual machine and actually natively run Windows programs, even though it's on top of Linux. Conversely, you could have a Windows machine, you could install VMware, and build a virtual machine running Linux and run Linux natively. And the other cool thing is you can have multiple virtual machines so that you could be running, let's say, 5 different virtual machines all on one Linux box, and all 5 of those virtual machines could be running Windows and be running Windows applications, say, you know, let's say servers for various things or whatever, and all of them be virtual. It's very, very cool. So, VMware, if you've ever wanted to play with it, VMware has released a server beta for download. You can download it, you can install it, you can play with it, and it's totally free. That pretty much rocks. So if you've ever wanted to play with VMware, have at it, play with it, enjoy it, learn it. It's actually a really good skill to have, you know, to work with VMware, because a lot of companies are getting into VMware for obvious reasons. I mean, for instance, let's say you're a developer and you've got to develop a program that runs under Linux and you've got to develop a program that runs under Windows, you know, maybe same program in both environments or whatever. You could have one machine, you could have 2 virtual environments, and you could test your program in those virtual environments. And if it crashes and came down around its ears, it's in a process that you could fire right back up. You're not having to reboot the machine, you just restart that process. Cool stuff. So, have at it. Enjoy. There you go. Alrighty, next item. 3 dead trolls in a baggie. Yeah, I know, that's a very bizarre name. And I abbreviate it to TDTIAB, 3 dead trolls in a baggie, have released, actually some time ago they released, this is a little bit old, released a little cartoon on the web that's how to buy a computer. And since we're talking about how to optimize computers today on the podcast, I figured first thing we need to know is how to buy a computer in the first place. So, without further ado, here is the audio from the web cartoon by 3 Dead Trolls in a Baggie on how to buy a computer.
Hi, this is Wes and Paul from 3 Dead Trolls in a Baggie.
And welcome to How to Buy a Computer. Over the next few minutes, we're going to explain to you a few simple hints that will take the fear out of buying a personal computer.
That's right. You know, Wes, a lot of people out there are asking themselves if they should buy a computer.
Well, I'm asking myself that right now.
Exactly. And the answer is, if you get bored waiting around for the things you own to become obsolete, then a computer is for you.
You bet.
Uh-huh.
Now, the single most important factor to keep in mind when buying your new computer is size.
Mm.
Get one that's too big to throw out the window, because that's what you're going to want to do at least 3 times a day.
Good point, Wes.
Thank
that's going to save you big money in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Remember, though, folks, computers are getting smaller and smaller all the time, so it might be a good idea to avoid problems down the road by moving into a basement suite with tiny windows now.
The next thing you'll need to decide is whether to buy a laptop or a desktop computer.
Good point, Paul. You know, a few years ago, all computers were desktop computers, and that means they were compact enough to be operated on a desk, but if you put them on a table or a counter or, God forbid, your lap, they'd shoot deadly beams into your eyes and then explode.
You don't want that.
No.
Now, however, we have laptop computers. The word laptop comes from a Latin expression meaning, don't drop this.
Laptop computers are designed to be light and portable so that you can impress strangers on airplanes.
I like to do that.
Yeah.
Whichever type of computer you buy, an important consideration is RAM. How much RAM should you buy? Well, in the words of Ernest Hemingway, buy a lot of RAM.
You know, here's a good tip when buying RAM. Ooh. Think of a very large number. Think of the biggest number you can think of.
Okay.
And then multiply it by 8.
Okay.
That's how much RAM you need.
Wow.
Yeah.
RAM comes in bunches of 8. 8 megabytes, 16 megabytes, 32 megabytes, 12,546,112 megabytes.
The reason RAM only comes in bunches of 8 is because inside your computer, the RAM is manipulated by tiny elves who only have 8 fingers.
I like it when elves manipulate things. Make sure your new computer comes with a CD-ROM. This is important because a CD-ROM drive allows you to access interactive versions of encyclopedias, atlases, cookbooks, and other kinds of boring books that you wouldn't normally buy in a million years.
You know, a CD-ROM also allows you to access multimedia.
Whoa, what is multimedia?
Well, multimedia is just like ordinary media, but not as good.
Sort of like this.
Yeah. For example, you could watch a video on your computer, a boring video of things you don't care about, but smaller and more flickery.
It's like owning a TV that's 3 inches wide.
Well, with all this information in hand, you're all set to go out and buy your new computer.
Okay.
The only thing you need to know now, Paul, is where do I buy it?
We suggest you try IKEA, where they have those hollow plastic fake computers they use to show off their desks.
Oh, yes. If you can manage to steal one of those, you'll have a great-looking computer to impress your friends. And nobody will be able to tell it's fake, especially after it's got that convincing layer of dust on it.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, yes. And remember, buying a computer isn't something you should be afraid of.
No way.
Even if you make a mistake and get the wrong one, it'll be obsolete so fast it just won't matter.
Good night.
There you go. You know, it's really good to know that even if you buy the wrong computer, it's going to be obsolete so fast that it just won't matter. Yeah. I'm sure that brings comfort to a great many computer buyers out there. Well, I tell you what, we are running so late on time. I mean, we're 32 minutes into a 30-minute program, but you know what? This is a podcast. And time just doesn't matter, right? So we're going to go ahead and get into how to optimize XP, even though we are past time for the end of the podcast. I kind of thought that might happen because I did a whole lot more blogging this week than usual. And since we talk about the items that I blogged about on the blog, then we kind of ran a little long in those other segments. But that's okay. We're going to go ahead, start on how to optimize XP, and then we'll pick it up again next week to finish it out. All right, are you ready? Here's what you need to do. Start getting your pencils ready. Actually, you don't have to get your pencils because I'm going to post the whole thing on the blog, so don't worry about it. Anyway, here's how to optimize XP, the doctor's prescription. The first parts of this are very, very simple, and you've probably already done them. We're going to really get into the meat of it probably more next week. Sorry about that. But again, we're just running really tight on time. Okay, first thing you need to do is you need to have an up-to-date virus scanner. This kind of goes without saying. If your machine is being eaten up by viruses, it's going to be slow, it's going to be ugly, and it's probably going to be like your mother wearing army boots. I don't know. It's just going to be a problem, right? So you need an up-to-date virus scanner. And one that I would recommend is Grisoft's AVG Free. I've talked about it before. You go to free.grisoft.com. Now that's Grisoft, Grisoft.com. Get AVG Free. There's no excuse because it is free. AVG Free is free. Say it with me. It's free. Okay. None of this deal. I'm going to buy Norton antivirus for $39 a year. No, no, no. First of all, I wouldn't buy Norton antivirus because it's ugly and it's evil. And once you install it, it's very hard to get off unless you use the utility that we talked about last week, which will completely remove it. And the best way to completely remove it is never to have installed it in the first place. So don't worry about Norton antivirus. Go out and get AVG Free. You'll thank me for that. All right, next thing you need to do is clean your system of spyware. Now, the best tool for this is a tool called AdAware, AdAware. AdAware will clean your system. Download it from LavaSoftUSA.com, LavaSoftUSA.com. Get it only from there because there's a lot of ad-removing programs, at least they claim to be, that sound a lot like AdAware because AdAware is so popular and it's free. Don't let somebody snooker you into trying to pay for an AdAware removal program because AdAware is free. Okay, go download it from LavaSoftUSA.com and you'll be, again, a happy camper. Now, once you have eliminated all the viruses on your system, and once you've eliminated all the adware on your system, that's going to be a long ways down the road to having a very fast, smooth-running computer. Okay? The next thing you need to do now is prevent spyware from getting on your system. For that, we have a program called Spyware Blaster. Now, the thing about Spyware Blaster, like any other program, is once you install it, just installing it isn't enough. It's not enough to just install it. You have to run the update to get the latest adware signatures into the program for it to prevent infestation by those programs. So, for instance, let's take my son Ben as an example. We installed Spyware Blaster on his computer many years ago. Okay, maybe not years ago, months ago. And how often does Spyware Blaster get updated with its ad signatures? Not very often. And so the machine begins to slow down and slow down and slow down. And I come in and say, well, you know what you need to do? You need to update your ad signatures and run Spyware Blaster and AdAware and so forth. So, again, not enough to install. You've got to keep it updated. So go install Spyware Blaster. Now, it's from Java Cool Software. Only get Spyware Blaster from Java Cool Software because, again, there are many, many, many programs out there pretending to be Spyware Blaster. But if you will get it and you will update it and you'll do it regularly, then you'll be in good shape. All right, the next thing you need to do, remove Microsoft Java Virtual Machine. It is evil. Goes without saying, actually, since it's made by Microsoft, but I digress. The thing you need to do is go to www.majorgeeks.com/download.php?DET=4158. Don't worry, that link will be in the notes. I know that that's a very weird and strange URL. However, what that is a program that somebody generously has written for free to remove totally the Microsoft Java Virtual Machine. Now, once you've uninstalled or removed the Java Virtual Machine from Microsoft, you need to get the real Sun Java Virtual Machine from java.com/en/download/index.jsp. So, again, that link will be in the notes. Go get and install the real Sun Java. Okay? Not the evil Microsoft brand, the good Sun brand. Remember, we want to keep you on the good side of the force. All right. Next thing you need to do is if you're using Windows, and of course you would be if you're talking about optimizing Windows, you would be using it. You need to be using Service Pack 2. Now, Service Pack 3 will be coming out someday. Not too far off. However, Service Pack 2 is the current Service Pack. You need to be running that. It comes with all kinds of goodies. It comes with its own little halfway decent but somewhat useless firewall that you need to go ahead and install with Service Pack 2 and activate. It comes with some cute little things about security that look really cool and fuss at you if you don't have an antivirus installed. So that's a good thing. You know, we want to tell users, look, you're being an idiot. Go download AVG free. I'm telling you, and I'm going to keep beeping and telling you this until you go do it. Okay, so it's a good thing. So Service Pack 2 has some good features. You need to go get Service Pack 2. Now, it will take a while to download if you don't have a high-speed internet connection. Maybe you'll have some friend that will download it and give it to you on a thumb drive. Whatever it takes. Get Service Pack 2 if you haven't already and install it. All right. Next point. Use a program called PC Wizard to find out about your hardware and make sure you're running up-to-date drivers. A lot of slowdowns and problems come from old, out-of-date drivers on your system. PC Wizard is a really cool little program. It's available from www.cpuid.com/pcwizard.php /directions. Again, that link will be in the notes. Go and get that program, and you'll be amazed. It will identify everything on your system, not just what it is in terms of the brand of the hardware, but specifically the rev numbers, everything you need to know exactly what you got to be able to go out and get the right drivers. Really cool stuff. So, go and update. Go forth and update your drivers. All right, next thing. This one is a little more complicated, but it's a good one. Now, remember, all of these things that I'm sharing with you will optimize your system, make XP run very fast, but it will turn off a lot of the dumb features that you never in a million years use anyway. So be warned, if you like dumb features that you never use anyway, then this is going to turn a lot of them off. Warning, Will Robinson, your dumb features are about to be turned off. Okay, here we go. Instructions. Go to Start. Go to Settings. Go to Control Panel. Within Control Panel, go to System. Click on the Advanced tab. In the Performance section, select Settings. There's a whole lot of things there. Uncheck all of them. Okay? All of them. But then go back and check these items and these items only. There's only 5. Out of all of the things listed that are dumb, useless things, only these 5 dumb, useless things need to be clicked on, all right? Show shadows under menus. Show shadows under mouse pointer. Show translucent selection rectangle. Use drop shadows for icon labels on the desktop. And use visual styles on windows and buttons. Just those dumb things. Check those and click Apply and OK. Now remember, a lot of the dumb things that you don't use are going to go away when you do this. I'm warning you. But it will run much faster. And that's the idea. Alright, now we want to optimize your page file. Optimize the page file? Yes, indeed. Just go with me here. You know, go with the flow. Here's what you want to do. The page file is a file that Windows uses for virtual memory management, okay? It is the space on the hard drive that Windows uses when it runs out of RAM. It will page, which is a computer term, paging, to that space on Windows, on the hard drive, because it doesn't have RAM to write that page of memory. It's a file called pagefile.sys. And it serves as a temporary virtual memory storage area for computer code and data that's going on, all right? So what we're going to do here is we're going to optimize that. Go to Start, go to Settings, go to Control Panel, click on System in the Advanced tab, then click on Performance section and select Settings. Under the Advanced tab in the Virtual Memory section, select Change. Then you want to change the values. Now, here's the thing. You want to change those values to a value that is useful for your system. And for that, we have a little mathematical formula. Okay, don't get all excited. Use calculator. Calculator will help you figure this out. I don't know how to do it in my head. I use calculator. You should too. Okay. Look at the initial size in megabytes of the amount of RAM in your system. Multiply it by 1.5. That's the initial size that you want to put in there. So, for instance, you knew there would be a for instance, didn't you? We'll actually do it for you right now. I'm bringing up calculator. Let's say I have 512 meg of memory. I want to multiply that times 1.5. I end up with 768. So my initial page file size needs to be 768. That's pretty cool. All right, now we want to know what to set the next point for the virtual memory. And for that, that maximum size needs to be 3 times the amount of RAM in your system. So, let's say again we have 512 meg of memory. We multiply by 3, we get 1536. So, that should be the maximum size for your page file. Okay? Not too complicated. You can do it. You can handle it. The notes are in the show notes. So don't worry about it. All right. Next thing you need to do is select Set, OK, and then reboot your system. Your page file settings will not change until you reboot your system. Okay. The next thing you want to do. Okay, here's the thing. Remember, this is the doctor's prescription to speed up your system, even though it will remove dumb features that Microsoft thought you needed, but you really didn't. Okay, you ready? We want to disable the indexing service. I know you're shuddering. You're thinking, oh no, Dr. Bill, not the indexing service. What'll I do without the indexing service? You'll never miss it. You don't even know what it is. No, some of you do know what it is. The idea is to index all the files on your system to make it quicker to do a lookup of the files on your system when you do a search. You know what, folks? The computer you have on your desktop is more powerful by orders of magnitude, by leaps and bounds, than the computers that man went to the moon with. You remember what Three Dead Trolls and a Baggy sang about when they said that every OS sucks? You remember what they said? They said that those men went to the moon with 32 kilobytes of RAM. It was good enough for them. It should be good enough for you. Well, guess what? We just talked about your system might have 512 megabytes of RAM. A megabyte is 1,024 kilobytes. So we're talking huge amounts of memory. Then we're looking at a computer that may be a 3 gigahertz processor. I mean, the dudes that went to the moon, man, they didn't even know what a gigahertz was. Okay? So, the bottom line of all this is, your computer can index and find files so fast, you will blink before it gets done. So, why would you want to index the files anymore? Duh! So, here's what you do. You want to shut down indexing. To disable it, you need to go to My Computer, right-click on the hard drive partitions on your drive. You may have more than one. Then, once you do that, left-click on Properties, uncheck Allow Indexing Service to Index This Disk for Fast File Searching. I know that sounds like a bad thing, but believe me, you'll never, ever notice it. And it will speed your computer up tremendously because it won't be out there in the background running these processes going, I've got to index all these files. And it really doesn't need to, okay? So, allow indexing service indexes file for fast searching. You uncheck that. You select apply changes to subfolders and files, and it will run and run and run and run and run. If any of the files can't be updated, just select ignore all. Just keep selecting ignore all until it finally finishes, okay? Next thing you need to do, again, I know this is going to just absolutely freak you out, but hang in there. Do it anyway. You'll never notice it. Go to, here's what we're going to do. Are you ready? Disabling all Windows XP task sounds. You mean it won't go beep when I click something? I'm sorry, it won't, but it will be much faster. And we're trying to optimize for speed, remember? So what you want to do is you want to go to Start, Settings, Control Panel, Sounds and Audio Devices, select the Sounds tab, and under Sound Scheme, there is a scheme, an option, for no sounds. Now, this doesn't mean your system or your laptop or whatever won't have any sound at all, okay? It will still have sounds when it should have sounds. It just won't go boop, beep, blop, ah, mm, those kinds of things, okay? Won't be going on in the background. which annoy you anyway, right? So why have them? It just slows your system down. You can turn it off. Do that. Okay. Cut off the sounds. Reduce recycling bin space usage. Drive space usage. The recycling bin kind of blocks out a part of your hard drive in order to have enough space for, you know, compacting or getting rid of files, deleting files. So what you want to do is you want to minimize the size of that recycling bin. In Windows XP, the maximum size of the recycling bin is set by default to 10% of your hard drive. When full, this can be a big waste of drive space. Reducing the maximum size prevents excess space from being wasted. It's quite common to save hundreds of megabytes of deleted files in the recycling bin, and it's never emptied because it just never empties itself. So here's what you want to do. To change the size, the recycling bin size, right-click on the recycle bin, left-click on properties, select the global tab, and then use one setting for all drives. Move the slider to 3%. Not 10%, but 3%. Okay. Oh, man. We're really running. I'm gonna shut down the podcast before it gets to an hour, okay? But one more quick one, and then we'll pick it up again next week. Here's what we want to do for the next point. We want to reduce system restore drive space usage. Okay? The system restore creates periodic snapshots of your critical system files, like the registry, complex database, user profiles, those kinds of things, and stores them as a restore point. In case something goes wrong with your system, you can then revert back to the previous working state. Now, that's cool. It's a neat feature. But the default size that System Restore uses can be really, really large. Okay, so we want to lower that to a more reasonable level. So what we want to do is we want to go to Start, Settings, Control Panel, go to System, click on the System Restore tab, and for each drive partition, highlight it and then select Settings under Drive Space Usage, adjust the slider so that the System Restore is using roughly 5% or a minimum of 1,000 megabytes of disk space per partition and select OK. 1,000 megabytes is 1 gig, okay? So, 5% or 1 gig, click it to that, all right? All right. One last thing I'm going to try to fit in this week before we jump to next week to finish out this segment, is increasing the mouse pointer speed. This will feel like a big, big speed increase, even though it technically isn't that much of an increase. But perception is reality when it comes to Windows quite a bit. So here's the thing. We want to increase the mouse pointer speed. By default, Windows sets the mouse pointer speed to just an average speed, which can slow down the time it takes to move the cursor around. Yeah, you grab your mouse, you move your cursor. You want it to be responsive. You want it to feel like it's moving quickly, okay? So increasing this will allow you to use your computer more quickly and is more efficient with less mouse movement. So here we go. Here's how to do it. Go to Start, go to Settings, go to Control Panel, click on Mouse, Pointer Options tab, then under Motion, adjust the slider. Now, listen closely, 1 to 5 steps closer to fast. Only 1 to 3 steps is recommended. Okay, you can do 1 to 5, but 1 to 3 is recommended. All right? Check Enhance Pointer Precision and select OK. All right, now this is all personal preference. And you should kind of work with it and get a feel for it as to what's going to be best. If you're, you know, having issues with moving a mouse around and clicking on things, you may make it so fast that it's annoying, okay? So you want to back off that. Also, if you have a really cheap or worn-out mouse, or it's not an optical mouse, and you can tell if it's an optical mouse because you pick it up and look at it, and it's got a little red shiny thing, that's an optical mouse. That's the kind of mouse to get. If you don't have an optical mouse, throw it away and go get an optical mouse. Okay, that's another really good tip that will help speed up your system. If you have a little rolly ball thing, just toss it. Okay, go Go get an optical mouse. They're cheap. You can get one for less than $10. Dude, you need to get you an optical mouse, all right? So, we'll quit for there this week. Oh, man. There's just so many other good things. I can't really wait to get into them. A lot of them are cute little programs that I was talking about that could even be software, Geek Software of the Week things. But, man, oh, there's just so many good things. We'll talk about it more next week when we continue on optimizing XP. But you've got enough going on right now. If you do these things we talked about today, your system will sing and it will be lovely. But when we get into it next week, you'll be amazed. It will just get even faster. I tell you what, I did this, just personal experience. I did this with an old laptop, and it was a decent laptop. It wasn't, you know, wasn't great, but it was okay. I did these optimizations on it. Man, you'd think it was a brand spank new 3 gigahertz laptop. Dude, it flies. So I tell you what, these are good things to do. And you won't miss any of the things that Microsoft thinks you ought to have. I mean, come on, they're the evil empire. You don't need to listen to them. Take control of your own destiny. That's what you got to do. All right. Well, I tell you what, it's about time to slide on out of here. Actually, it's way past time. We've run almost double the normal length of the podcast. Man. No wonder I'm tired. All right, remember, until next week, the doctor is out.